Welcome, Popcorn Talk fans, to the very first episode of Sci-Fi Weekly. We're going to give you all the latest news in the science fiction universe, including a breakdown of the classic feature film, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, all that and more on today's premiere of Sci-Fi Weekly.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Bi-weekly fans, welcome to the very first episode! Very excited, as you can see. Yeah. Guys, thank you for joining us for today, which theoretically is your very first look at Sci-Fi Weekly, unless you're time traveling from the future, in which case you've seen how this program has evolved, and in that case, I'm sorry for the production value. And I hope that things are going well in the future. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. I'm so excited to bring this show to you. It's something we've been developing for a while that I've wanted to talk about because I could talk about science fiction for days, years, months. I guess I'm in a weird order. It's wibbly wobbly.
Yeah.
Let me introduce to you my co-host, Jesse Klein.
What's up, science fiction nerds? I'm here for you. I love sci-fi. I'm super excited to talk about science fiction. I think this is an awesome show. Can't wait to break down classic movies and TV shows. Let's get into this.
Yeah, and perfect timing there with that musical cue on the end there. Just to give you guys a quick rundown of what this show is going to be, we're going to be talking about everything that comes out in the world of sci-fi. That means bringing you the latest news from across movies, television, books, including some looks at science fiction in real life because we're living in the future. And then every week we're going to bring you one big discussion topic of the week. This week, in honor of the alien invasion movie coming out on Friday, Independence Day Resurgence, we thought we'd take a look at a classic sci-fi alien invasion film that maybe has some friendly aliens.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. There may be some nefarious stuff going on with the Close Encounters aliens, because we're going to talk about Close Encounters of the Third Kind, revisiting it 39 years later. Mm-hmm. I believe I think my math is right on there. Yeah. 39 years later, how is it held up? And we'll get into that towards the back of the second half of the show. But before then, let's start out with our info download, where we're going to break down all the news from this week. Yeah. So starting off, there was some news. Jesse, I don't know how much you've been paying attention. There's a big lawsuit from Paramount about the Star Trek fan film that was crowdfunded, and it was going to be a high, but they were claiming studio level production values.
Yeah.
And Paramount said nay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not, the news is the lawsuit's not over.
But yeah, so in case anyone isn't familiar with this, Axanar was the name of the film, and it was just a fan film that they wanted to crowdfund. It was a big budget, and the lawsuit, Paramount said, we don't want you to do this because that is our intellectual property and you don't have the rights. They said, we do, Klingon as a like, and then it became a debate about, is that, like, how much do they have the rights? Is Klingon a copyrightable language, or is it a living language of the world?
Yeah.
Then a lot of people, including J.J. Abrams, said, we're going to drop that. Paramount's not going forward with this. They're dropping the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't what we make movies for. But now Paramount has filed motions to keep the lawsuit going.
I think that Paramount is doing this lawsuit less about this actual movie, but to prevent other IP infringements in the future.
Yeah, The tough thing about this is, like, I want them to make the fan film.
Me too.
I don't think there's anything wrong with this. However, I do stand with Paramount in this issue, because if I went out and made a movie and it became wildly popular, I wouldn't necessarily want anybody to be able to use my ideas.
Sure.
They can make it, but, like, there's a certain amount of, you have to protect your property, or does become free license stuff. And they have every right to defend what they own. I don't think they should be going after these people, but they have every right to.
And especially with a world as in-depth as Star Trek is, like, you want to have some sort of creative control over what the narrative in that universe is as well.
Yeah. Because like you don't know what these guys are going to do, and then like the stuff starts. It's not quite parody,
yeah.
And then it becomes a weird like, oh, and if this is so high production value that it maybe is better than the Star Trek movie you're trying to put out this year, now people are less likely to go see your movie,
yeah.
And they're paying for this fan film, and that's where it gets dangerous,
yeah, for sure.
So we'll keep an eye on it as that unfolds, and see if they actually follow through.
Yeah.
More news from a different universe.
Sure.
The Alien Predator universe. Yeah, I guess it's Alien, one thing.
I think they call it the Weyland-Yutani universe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Noomi Rapace, I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I do too.
Who played Elizabeth Shaw in Prometheus,
mm-hmm.
is confirmed that she will be appearing in Alien Covenant.
Yeah.
If you're confused by all of this, I'm right there with
Zach
you.
Zach and I sat down in a Starbucks trying to figure out this alien universe.
Like, because they released a photo of Ridley Scott on set of Alien Covenant, and then yeah. they listed him as director Ridley Scott. And I was very confused. I'm like, wait a minute. Neil Blomkamp's supposed to be directing the new Alien movie.
Yeah.
What's happening? I had no idea until, like, I had looked at these new releases that
yeah.
Alien Covenant is not Alien 5, which is what Sigourney Weaver and Neil Blomkamp are involved
yeah.
in. This is Prometheus 2, but they changed the title to Alien. If you can follow it, great.
Yeah. Prometheus 2 Electric Boogaloo
yeah.
is now called Alien Covenant, and also confirmed ladders are in this movie. I
think that photo is actually from Prometheus.
Okay, so
I don't know if that's from this.
So that's a
I just pulled a picture of
director's cut. There was a ladder in Prometheus. That's probably why it didn't make sense.
It was a really standard ladder. Yeah. Like it was like, wait, why do the Prometheus aliens have a Home Depot yeah. brand ladder? It's very confusing.
Yeah, very confusing. I mean, yeah, love it. I think after looking into it, it's Alien Covenant is a direct sequel to Prometheus. Like, I feel like it's taking off almost exactly afterwards, right?
Yeah, that's what it's... So, I mean, the fact that she's in it, and we don't know to what extent she's going to be involved.
Yeah.
But because, like, the last thing we saw was her, like, riding off into the sunset, proverbially, yeah. with the head of Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, sure.
It makes sense that if this is going to continue, because Michael Fassbender, we knew, was in it.
Yeah.
And so if he's going to be there,
then
it's weird that she wouldn't be. And he's not, he's a robot. So like in theory, it could have been another version of him he lived for another 1,000 years because he can.
Yeah.
But I would want to, if they're going to make this sequel, I want to know what happened to her, at least. I want to know.
Yeah,
even
sure.
if I don't have to see the whole journey, I need to check in.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's in it gives me Prometheus was not my favorite film, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I'm intrigued by a sequel, even ignoring whatever name they have decided and whatever marketing
yeah
positive name they've decided to give it. Prometheus 2. I will go see.
Yeah, as will I. I love that universe. I'm excited about. I mean, I didn't enjoy Prometheus as much as I wanted to as well, just because I think those writers typically are really good at universe building, but not exactly good at answering any questions, which is kind of their deal, which is fine. I'm still excited about this movie. I love aliens. I love progenitor races. I want to see them. Let's see him. I love robot heads. Great. Let's see it.
Look, I mean, Michael Fassbender is a brilliant actor. He's
yeah.
shown, like, even with, like, the most insane writing and roles around him, he
yeah.
can be the standout star. I'm not going to name any movies, but came out a few weeks ago. not naming it.
And he can hit a skyhook while riding a bicycle, so that's that's important.
Oh, man. I'm excited. We're both excited to see that movie.
Yeah.
But let's jump over to different universe that we're going to be talking about in a few weeks,
mm-hmm.
which we're going to be talking about before we get to I'm all over the place apparently
yeah.
because my rundown was not properly updated, which is my fault. But let's talk about Star Wars for
Great.
A second, because a big news drop this morning.
Yeah.
My big news drop, I mean, we got one cover of a magazine.
Yeah.
But Entertainment Weekly is going to be releasing at the end of the week their next issue, and they have Star Wars Rogue One on the cover.
Yeah, big thing for me on this is there's some Roboid friend in the background, which we'd previously not seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is apparently Alan Tudyk's character.
Perfect. Perfect casting.
Yeah, it should be... I mean, I like the idea of him being a robot. Apparently, this, like, I don't... We'll ask our sister friends over at Jedi Alliance,
sure,
which you can see on Mondays, and since this issue comes out on Friday,
yeah,
they'll have all the Star Wars info for you over there.
Yeah, they're very good.
But it's K-250.
Okay,
is the droid? It's not
classification.
It's a droid. Then we see Jyn Erso looking like sort of an intergalactic Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
With the gray Infinity scarf.
Yeah, that gray Infinity scarf. That's the same one from Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't realize Disney does not have a huge wardrobe department. So they just had, Netflix had to lend.
Oh, I thought it was literally an Infinity scarf in that
it lasted throughout Infinity.
It lasts throughout all time and space.
But the biggest news, of course, is that this officially confirms it. Darth Vader is going to be in Rogue One.
Great. Love that guy. I love his work.
You love his work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what he did with Alderaan.
Yeah. Great work. That guy is a consummate worker. I'm excited to see him in Rogue One. I mean, we're going to see like a Darth Vader prequel that we'll probably like... and that's exciting.
Yeah, it'll be good to see how they use this character, how they use the character in this time, because of course he's involved since he was. This is supposed to lead right up into the beginning of Episode 4.
Yeah, this is the stealing of the plans, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like it gets the plans to Princess Leia.
I don't see any Bothans here, which is upsetting.
I think that was the other.
Oh, those are the other plans?
The other set of plans.
Okay. There are a lot of plans going on. Yeah.
I'm sure there were some Bothans involved, but this was not at the many Bothans.
Okay. They all died.
So check it out on Friday for more information about how much Darth Vader is going to be involved, what exactly his role is going to be, if he's just going to be sort of this like force that's like looming over you the whole time, or if he's actually going to be a character with his own story and arc throughout the feature.
Love to see some Darth Vader action.
Yeah. So very much looking forward to that. Let's jump onto TV for a little bit.
I'd love to jump on a TV.
Be careful.
Okay.
Depending on how old they are, there may be glass.
Yeah, sure.
Doctor Who is in the news this week. The spinoff class, there's some casting stuff. The spinoff class was confirmed that there's going to be a gay character.
Great.
In the film. After all the events, all the recent events, the showrunners wanted to let it be known, like, this is going to be a very inclusive show.
Yeah.
Basically, they've slowly been letting out more details about, like, how the Coal Hill School is going to be involved and how there's monsters. I guess it's because the Doctor goes there so often.
That it just, monsters are drawn to it?
Well, you know, that he's, like, sort of destroyed the space-time around the school.
Great.
So there's just, like, monsters getting out.
All right, so it's a real Buffy the Vampire Slayer situation.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Doctor Who, and that description, I couldn't be more behind.
Yeah, that is an amazing description of something. If it was an ice cream flavor, I'd eat it by the gallons.
Yeah, I'm excited. If they don't have Ian, the superintendent, in this show, I will be massively disappointed. Because we know he works there. The actor's still kicking.
He's still there, yeah. We should
There's
get
no
Ian.
Reason for him not to be involved.
Let's keep some Ian going.
Matt Lucas is going to return to the main Doctor Who show for season 10. Matt Lucas, in case you don't remember who that is, played Nardal in the Christmas special this year. The bald guy who was also recently in Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Also
from Little Britain.
Yeah.
And Little USA.
So we're going to get another big giant robot with a tiny little head.
Great.
I'm all on board.
Love Matt Lucas. He's very funny.
This story I'm really excited about. There's just not a lot to talk about with Doctor Who. It's interesting.
That's it.
But info. I'm really excited about this casting news around American Gods.
Oh, man.
I can't wait for this show.
This show is it's one of my favorite books of the last few years, and it's looking so good.
Yeah, they keep adding more and more huge names to this show, and all I can think is,
my God, it's full of stars.
I'm really proud of that.
Yeah. The great job, computer.
Yes, thank you to computer for working the ones and twos.
You're welcome.
Computer Mark One, is hard at work behind the cameras. But the big announcement this week was Orlando Jones.
Yeah,
has joined the cast as Anansi, the Spider God.
Yeah,
and then Damore Barnes. I'm really having trouble with a lot of these names today.
Yeah,
Damore Barnes, who's known for 12 Monkeys, the TV show, was cast as Mr. Ibis, who's the funeral home director.
Yeah, I remember.
I love the Orlando Jones is going to be in this.
And he's going to be Anansi, which is one of my favorite characters in the book. And if you read kind of the spinoff book, The Anansi Boys.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah. It explores... it's great. It's fantastic. It's about someone who is the son of Anansi the Spider, and he just finds it out after Anansi dies, and it's him and his brother, chasing their legacy, basically. It's amazing.
I mean, they're joining a cast with Ian McShane, Cloris Leachman, Ricky Whittle as Shadow, Emily Browning, Crispin Glover...
Yeah.
And Gillian Anderson as Media.
It's an amazing huge cast
that I'm super this is probably my most anticipated show of 2016. And they gave us some set photos this year.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah.
If we click down to those, two shots of Mr. Wednesday.
Mr. Wednesday.
There he is lounging. Computer, we could bring that up. Entertainment Weekly again delivering the goods. Lounging on a crocodile head at a bar. And then here we see him just casually watching as Shadow fights a leprechaun.
Yeah, very exciting.
That's what's happening here.
Yeah.
It all looks perfect. This looks like a Neil Gaiman book brought to life.
Yeah, I'm so excited for the show. I can't wait.
Yeah. So any other thoughts on American Gods?
Give it to us already, please.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
They are hard at work, and it's been hard at work for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Is HBO.
HBO
on,
has.
On Westworld.
Yeah.
Because Westworld put out a trailer this week for the first time since last August's teaser.
Yeah.
After the show went into reshoots and rewrites because someone involved was not happy with what they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
So J.J. Abrams, Jonathan Nolan have brought us a new trailer for the show, and it looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, that trailer is amazing. I like all the questions it brings up. I like all the themes that it's bringing up. It looks like it is kind of a spiritual, semi-spiritual, what is life, basically, is the main question. How do you define living? Because it's these androids or these humans that have been created to, if you're a wealthy person, you can just live in whatever your fantasy is, and what makes you alive versus what makes you dead.
Yeah, and this basically confirms everything I've been...
Or not real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This confirms everything I've been hearing about the new take on this. This version as opposed to the movie is that this is Westworld from the robot's perspective.
Yeah.
And it very much looks like it's going to question, if you can... think, if you can feel, and it's that classic sci-fi trope, but it's something I'll never get tired of seeing.
Yeah,
is that it's just the questioning of what is life and how do you define it, and at what point do you stop? The quotes: "Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality
every day?"
I don't know that we're not living in the Matrix.
I think that there are some scientists that say that statistically, it makes more sense that we are in a computer program right now than a real life.
That hurts my head.
Yeah.
But there's it's, I mean, there's the, so there's some things that they're not going to do. There's no evidence that they're going to do anything with, like, or even show us Rome world or medieval world. Maybe it's, like, in the periphery.
I mean, other seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Save that for other seasons.
But they've really gone full out for the Western feel. If we take a look at this photo, computer, if you could bring it up for us, of just the landscape.
Yeah.
They shot the show entirely in California.
Yeah.
Which not a lot of shows do these days.
No, taxes.
But like they've did it a lot in Santa Clarita and the Paramount Ranch.
I mean, yeah, that looks like a Western.
Yeah,
like that's pretty Western-y looking.
Yeah, it straight up looks like a Western, and it feels good, and it you can imagine being in this amusement park. If we cut to the map that of the park, like you can see, like this is how they like they lured over this place.
Yeah,
like this is a futuristic amusement park, which like I love the little detail. If we cut to the next picture, they have the little globe, like just like it's Universal Studios but for murder.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it felt like watching the trailer. I got a very Ex Machina feel off of it, like, you know, all of those shots of just like bodies like hanging, being ready to be used. Like it felt very Ex Machina to me, which was my favorite movie of the last year, so I'm very excited about this.
Ex Machina, like, I hope it stays to, well, it, by the very nature of this, it's going into that robots kill humans thing.
Yeah.
It's something that we see so much. It was one of the things I didn't love about Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Is that was like, they just went there. I was expecting it to turn a turn left.
Yeah.
But I'm very excited to see what they do with this, because it looks like it's even more just like playing with that idea of like humans and androids interacting and what the result of that is. Do you have any other favorite moments from the trailer?
I mean, very J.J. Abramsy with all of the eye close-ups and like how every time we saw the eye close-up, it got more and more kind of graphic and scary. Like, it looks like a kind of freaky show. So, like, that's what I'm into.
The line, like, in the shots, what are your drives to meet my maker? And he's just smiling and laughing.
Real creepy.
It's real creepy, but it feels like that and the moment where with the line, I feel space is opening up inside of me like a building with rooms I've never explored.
Yeah.
That line to me alone says this is going to be some very careful sci-fi tinkering with a lot of sci-fi thought went into this, because that is how I would expect a computer mind to
describe
coming into more intelligence, because like we don't have that kind of like
awareness
of the how our brain is working at all times, but a computer would. It would know that when a synapse fires, where the synapse like signal goes and exactly what it does and how fast it does it. It would have all that in measurable readings.
Yeah.
So it would feel like it's finding a new space in a building it already knew.
Yeah, that's it's pretty exciting. I'm very jazzed for it. I'm also jazzed for some just good old Western fun.
Yeah.
It mixed between my sci-fi. Like I like some of the shots where it was just like seeing them like mosey into town.
Yeah. mosey into town like and find a prostitute. Like
mosey into town, find a prostitute, kill a couple roboids, and then get out of there.
For those of you that don't know, HBO is going to be bringing it to us in the fall.
They've announced that it's
coming in the fall.
Yeah.
And lastly, before we move away from the news, I do want to say just a little bit because we lost Anton Yelchin this week.
Yeah,
as I'm sure many of you heard, he's probably best known for playing Ensign Chekov in the Star Trek reboot with the J.J. Abrams verse.
Yeah.
This was very sad. Killed in an automobile it was an accident. Effectively, it was a malfunction with his Jeep.
Yeah,
but it's very sad, and he will be missed. Like he was a fantastic actor, not just in this role, but everything you've seen
everything
him in, everything
in,
that you didn't even realize you saw him in, because he did have that ability to sort of like disappear into roles.
Yeah,
and it's a shame that we won't be able to see what he would have done as he went forward. Because he did a lot of sci-fi work. He was in Terminator, Genesis, which is like, forget the movie itself, but like he was good. Like, and I'm like, just what else could he have done with the popularity that Star Trek has given him now as an actor?
Anton was real close with the comedy community. I met him maybe 5 or 6 times. He was at a lot of parties. He was always like the nicest guy in the room. He was for sure a big like nerd, like loved talking about Star Trek. Like, you know, most people when you see someone, like you want to kind of leave your distance, but he would like come in and like talk to people about Star Trek and was like super excited about being in that universe. It was a really nice guy, and it just it's terrible to see someone get their life cut that short. But he leaves behind a great, you know, a great legacy in his films, and you know, what he's got a movie coming out soon. It'll be great to see him on screen.
Yeah, and well, and I expect that there'll be a lot more pouring. There were already a lot of the people from Star Trek, and it's just like from the feature the film community, like sending out their feelings afterwards. But when Star Trek comes out in a few weeks, I think we'll see a lot more around that as well.
Yeah.
Moving on to more frightening news. Let's put it this way.
Terrifying news.
Once a week, we're going to bring you guys our segment, Sci-Fi in Real Life. And Jesse's got a real scary bit of the sci-fi world becoming real.
Yeah, so... it turns out that gene splicing, all of that kind of stuff, Gattaca is coming to the real world. A lot of scientists with the Genome Project have been pushing and got legalized a gene correcting tool, is I believe what they called it.
I think they called it a gene editing.
A gene tool, editing
which is
tool.
Even scarier. Like gene correcting almost sounds like okay, yeah, you're gonna like fix like Tay-Sachs disease.
But
or
editing,
something,
editing is like cold and lifeless. shout out to all my editing friends out there, but you know what it is. And basically, like they've shown an example of like they will go into your white blood cells and your defense system and basically change it so that it will attack cancerous cells like melanoma and that kind of stuff, which at first sounds great, but it also paves the way and opens up what's the term they use? Like baby designer babies?
Yeah.
Yeah, designer babies, where you could presumably ask a doctor to go in and say like, oh, I want this baby to have blue eyes, or I want this baby to be more athletic, or I want this baby to be whatever you want. It's a designer baby. I want this baby to have a prehensile tail.
Yeah.
Whatever you want. and that's a terrifying world.
Yeah, and they even gave it like a sci-fi name.
They gave it a name that was like sounds like something I'll be like, please don't kill us all.
It's CRISPR, but without the E.
Yeah.
all uppercase CRISPR.
Yeah, CRISPR, and like I can't wait to be begging CRISPR not to take over the world in the future.
CRISPR is gonna burn us to a crisp, is what's gonna happen.
Exactly.
No, I mean, and there's a lot of real theories behind this, because there is like a legitimate case for this. Like if
for
you
sure.
were going to try to remove stuff, the like genetic diseases, like I mentioned, Tay-Sachs,
mm-hmm.
like that's a disease that like the kid's gonna die in like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Like there's nothing you can do about it. And if you could remove that gene,
mm-hmm.
that's a great step
for
to
sure.
curing disease. But then where do you stop? Do you take, you start putting in immunities to diseases, and then you put in immunities to the common cold, and then you're like, oh, well, we don't want them to get weak, so we'll keep their muscles very strong, so then they become next level athletes. And then like, okay, that baby wasn't asked to be born that way. Can we let them compete in sporting events and the Olympics and everything because they were designed that way? And then it becomes like, are there two species? It's
The big thing, and they explored a lot in Gattaca, is the economic the socioeconomic repercussions, mm-hmm. where it's wealthy babies will be born, you know, without any like eyesight issues. so they'll be better in school because they can see the blackboard without the need of glasses. They'll not get sick as much, so they won't miss school as much. They'll have a proficiency in building muscle tissue, and so they'll be, you know, more physically fit than the less wealthy children.
And it's worth saying that this is not legally being done in the U.S. yet.
No.
But it is being done overseas. The thought, according to the Gizmodo ad that I – or ad, the Gizmodo article that I read – ad for CRISPR.
It was an advertisement for CRISPR.
No, but the articles are basically saying, like, if like China starts doing this and then they have like an average IQ significantly boost, like, does the US then just have to make it legal in order to keep up?
Will there be a genetic arms race? Yeah.
It's an interesting thing to watch because, like, again, just like the ordering coffee from your phone and then it just appears in your hand when you walk it, like walk in, get coffee, walk out. That's the future. This is also the future.
This is also,
both of them are coming.
And it's a scary future.
All right. Let's get our main discussion going.
Oh, I am so excited for this.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I've got my little Devil's Tower thing here.
Yeah.
I found this in a Salvation Army.
That's awesome.
And I was just like, must own this.
Yeah,
it looks like it's from 1977.
It does.
It's just probably like a random guy's photograph.
It's probably a production still.
It's literally like it's like from somebody who just was like taking it for a photography competition.
Well,
but like that's even weirder.
That is weirder.
For those of you who are listening to this, I have a framed photograph of Devil's Tower.
Yeah,
that somebody bought and framed,
and it is not made out of mashed potatoes.
Let's start out with, although I do have that at home.
Yeah.
Let's start with Total Recall. First experience. When did you first see this movie?
I probably first saw it around age 10. I remember watching it in the den. This movie, I rewatched it recently. I hadn't seen it since then. I had forgotten that this movie was the basis for like my top two nightmares of my childhood. And I had completely spaced it out of my brain, completely forgotten about it. And I remember liking this movie when I was a little kid, but I also remember it freaking me the heck out. And yeah, that guy for sure. And I just remember that I had like a few reoccurring nightmares that were specifically Close Encounters of the Third Kind based.
Yeah, I mean, I first saw this as a teenager.
Okay.
I don't even remember I've seen it so many times in my life. The first time sort of blends away.
Yeah.
But I know I saw it as a teenager and was just like, it was during that first like, hey, I want to make movies phase. And I kind of start going into movies from the 70s and stuff and like falling in love with Spielberg as like, because loving like those blockbuster hits.
Yeah.
And this was just like the pinnacle of like, oh my God, this is like this is the thing that I love was what I took away from this. And part of like why I wanted to revisit it today was that it is so different to rewatch it. Because I rewatched it like 6 months ago with somebody who had never seen it. And it was fascinating to see it for the first time in a few years, and it's a different experience.
It's very
than
different.
I remember.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the three, because there's three cuts.
Yeah.
Which one did you watch?
I believe I watched the original cinematic cut because there was nothing on the ship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you? Here's how you know.
Oh.
Did you see Carl Weathers?
I did not.
Okay, so you saw the director's cut.
Okay.
Before we came in here, which is the definitive Close Encounters.
That's the definitive.
There's three cuts. The original theatrical cut
has Carl Weathers.
Was rushed that Spielberg didn't, like, they made him put it out, like, 8 months before he originally wanted to.
Yeah.
And there's a few scenes in there that he took out. There's a few things in there that weren't in there that got put in. For example, the ship, Rapoxy, I believe it's something like that, is not in the original take.
Oh, wow.
But Carl Weathers, which I think I had never seen the theatrical cut until I sat down to like watch all three before I came in here. But because the original cut has the scene when the military has everyone held, like, don't go up there, there's nerve gas.
Mm.
Roy is stopped by Carl Weathers.
Fantastic.
And it's only one scene, is super early, obviously super early in his career, but I was just like, what are you doing, Carl?
Carl Weathers.
He's just like, oh, whatever. I got to make stews. You know?
Yeah, got to make those stews. Got to stop those predators.
Yeah. So it was cool stuff. The special edition had like the which is the one they made when they let Spielberg do it. That was one where they let him go and reshoot some stuff like with the ship. But then they also, as a trade, they were like, if you want to make these changes, you need to show us what's in the mothership at the end of the movie. And he begrudgingly agreed, did it. And they were some stuff that they took out and then like got put back into the director's cut. All the gathering of materials like for the house, like when he's going to build the giant one, cut. In the special edition. Like, and it's a little jarring.
Ooh, that's...
Yeah, it's a little jarring because they still have, like, when she leaves... Like, it basically cuts from her yelling at him to her leaving the next day. And you still have the little kid going, Dad needs some more help.
Okay.
So it's a little, like, jarring. But, like, I guess they just, like, wanted to soften the family drama of it a little bit.
Because my question to you is, what is this movie about?
Yeah, so... my first reactions after rewatching this, the family plot was really hard to watch for a lot of it, because if like there's two sort of like ways that you can follow Roy's story. When you look at him as a family man, this is about a guy, like if you remove the alien elements, this is about a guy going through a mental breakdown and his family is like inability to handle it.
Yeah.
And it's like when you consider like her not believing him and then like flipping out at him when he like doesn't know what's going on, it's like, yeah this is a guy with a huge like he's having a breakdown.
It's very Spielberg in that it is Steven Spielberg, especially at this period of time in his career, was really interested in exploring the themes of young parents and like parents who weren't exactly ready to have children and instead had multiple children, and was a lot about like being raised by the television and kind of like, you know, this was a period of time where the first time in American history, both parents were working and the children were kind of raising themselves on TV. And that was kind of a theme that Spielberg really explored.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Poltergeist, which he didn't direct, but he wrote and produced, that is very much, it's almost the exact same movie in that it is this otherworldly thing that the parents kind of, you know, in Poltergeist, they smoke a J while their kid is getting like, getting kidnapped by a tree monster. And it's, I think if you took the aliens out and instead said it was, you know, a motorcycle, and every time he was trying to get his family to go see a motorcycle, it's about a dad who wasn't ready to become a family man. And he wasn't ready to have children or a wife at this point. And instead, he's getting them up in the middle of the night and saying, hey, this is the thing I'm really excited about. And they don't care. And it's what he cares more about than his family. In the end, he cares more about the motorcycle than he does about his family. And it forces his family to leave. I think that mental illness thing is there as well. But for me, especially looking at Spielberg's other work, it's more about a dad who is not ready to have children.
Interesting. I mean, I think that's a part of it. Like, he's very childlike. He loves Pinocchio. He wants to share Pinocchio with his kids.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like, but he's like, no, but you want to be like my childhood.
Yeah.
Like, don't, no more, forget goofy golf.
Yeah.
Like, let's go see Pinocchio. Like, the wondrous world of Pinocchio. The interesting thing for me rewatching it was that the aliens are almost bad guys in a way that, like, I never saw when I... Because, like, for me, it was just like, oh, my God, aliens. Like, this would be so cool. And I was following that Roy's journey of just, like, being in love with the idea of finding aliens, finding out, solving the mystery of the universe.
I think that it's great, especially if you listen to the music. It swings from high tension to, like, beautiful kind of warm melodies back and forth, especially at the climactic scene. It leaves you feeling like you're not sure if this is a happy story or a sad story.
Yeah.
I am not, like, because a lot of people, when they describe Close Encounters of the Third Kind, they talk about how it's like, oh, the first time I realized that there could be good aliens and good alien invasions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if these aliens are good or bad. They still scare me. That spindly MF-er when that guy right there. Why? Yeah. When the door first lowers and he's like crouching like a creepy daddy long leg spider, that guy, why doesn't he walk out with the little dudes? That's my question.
I always wondered where he went.
Where did he go? What's going on? I hate that guy.
He's very much like, behold my children.
Yeah.
Like, he raises his arms. To me, like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not that they're, like, evil. Like, they're not, that's the thing. Like, we're talking about this because Independence Day is coming out. Independence Day was, we're going to take your resources. Yeah. Like, warlike. This was, like, and we'll talk about it in a minute, just, like, the now versus then. Like, how this movie was viewed differently in the 70s. But, this was like aliens who were here to, I guess, learn. Like, these are scientists. Yeah, they came here. They sort of figured out, they didn't know how to announce themselves. Mm-hmm. So they did it calmly, like trying to contact people through like signals and everything
in their brain.
And so what they did is they went slyly into like just a few people trying to get them to come to them, meet them in this like deserted location.
Yeah.
But what they sort of don't account for is like how this is going to affect them on a personal level, which when you're looking at global scale, one family got a little torn apart, but like we're gonna hopefully create a dialogue between two races.
Two alien species.
So it ultimately, like, it's not that they're evil, it's just that they end up doing a lot of damage, because you think about Roy, and then you think about how many other people did they do that to.
Well,
that didn't reach this point, because they talk about the dozen.
Yeah.
But, like, how many other people just were driven to madness?
Because they never saw the TV.
Yeah, they never saw the TV, or even just never got to the point, like, because he almost gave up on it, like, until he ripped the clay off.
Yeah.
Of the little mountain. If he hadn't done that, just imagine what would have happened to his family. Like, he was starting to get better, so maybe it would have faded away, but it might not have.
Yeah. And like, if you haven't seen the movie in a long time, go watch it. It is a really, really good movie.
Yeah.
And that home invasion scene, where they take the little kid, I forget the little kid's name.
Scary.
Is so scary and so well shot, it is terrifying. And you get all of your horrifying Spielberg moments. All of the toys come to life, which, again, you see that in Poltergeist and E.T. You get the tapping on the window from a tree, also Poltergeist and E.T. Like, you get a lot of really creepy Spielberg moments. And it is absolutely terrifying. The orange light peering through the vents is so creepy.
Yeah.
The slow turn of the screws up through the vents is extremely creepy. It's a terrifying sequence in what before was kind of like a slice of life family drama.
Yeah. No, it's really cool to watch. I mean, Spielberg, like, on all of this stuff, said, like, he even says, like, I would never have made Close Encounters the same way I made it in 77.
Yeah.
Because I have family that I would never leave.
Yeah.
So, like, even Spielberg judges Roy for leaving the planet and ditching his wife and three children.
Yeah. Well, at that time, Spielberg was a young man who didn't want a family.
Yeah.
Now he's an old man who loves his family.
Yeah. Like, and just, like, now he sees differently versus then. You made an interesting observation when we were talking about this, that this would sort of be, like, this was a blockbuster at the time.
Yeah.
But today it would sort of be an art house film.
This would definitely be an art house film. The fact that you don't get a money shot really of the aliens, like, you don't until the very end.
You get that little shot of Puck, the regular height alien.
Yeah, the proto ET alien there. You get like some shots, but it's mostly orange ice cream cones flying around, and then seeing a guy and his family break apart until the very end, and like, I feel as though if this was made today, either you would have to have a bunch of alien scenes. You'd have to see those flying saucers and get all of the great shots of it. And you'd need the family to be much younger. Even though this was a young family, it'd still have to be younger. Maybe have like a teenage daughter or something like that.
Yeah.
And you would need to make it a different film in order for it to be a blockbuster.
Well, I think like, and also fixing the family thing, if you're going to make this today, one of the things that changes is like, I think you could take the kids out of Roy's story, and then it's sort of like more acceptable if he's just like him and his wife or him and his girlfriend, even like yeah. split ways, because like, it can be like, oh, you were holding me back with, cause when there's kids involved, it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is just like the world, our worldview is so different from what we see in this film.
Yeah.
Just like the very beginning of the film, the U.S. government, mm-hmm. like government officials from America show up to like investigate in another country. Today, that would be like hyper suspect. Like, no, you can't come. Like, this is like, it doesn't yeah. matter what the things are. Like, you're not just going to let these people into your place. Like, that scene would not have gone that way.
Yeah, it would have been very different. Also, like, Spielberg at this time was dealing with the disenfranchised movement of post Nixon, post Vietnam War. You can't trust the government anymore. Before this, everyone, you could trust the government. The government was your friend, your family. Yeah. After Nixon, after the Vietnam War, it was the first time the American public was dealing with the idea that the government lies to you. So, you know, the whole thing about spreading the virus or the contaminated area around the Devil's Point, all of that kind of stuff was very much a product of its time and a big deal at the time. Now, it wouldn't be as big a story or as big a deal to have, you know, a helicopter chasing people that was a government helicopter. It would yeah. not be as iconic as it was then.
Well, it's like people just the with the nerve gas, like yeah. the way that they like are like, oh, people aren't going to want to leave. Well, people aren't going to want to like listen to the government today.
Yeah.
Today it would be a much more like, well, why am I like, they would have to have like the military at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Forcing these people to leave. Like yeah. there's just like, there's a level of trust for government officials in this movie that doesn't fit today. And it's very interesting. It's one of those things that like, it's almost 40 years old.
Yeah.
This movie.
And we saw it opening day.
Yeah,
much like the Infinity Scarf, we are eternal.
Yeah, us here at Sci-Fi Weekly, we've lived forever and will
and
die forever.
Yeah,
like, yeah. but yeah, I mean, there's just so much to love in this movie. Just you know, the last thing we want to do before we check out on our Close Encounters Revisited, I think we should take a quick look at what Neil deGrasse Tyson would say.
Seeing is not believing.
That's it.
So whenever we do a review or take a look at a movie, I think it's always fun to think, what would Neil deGrasse Tyson say about this sci-fi feature?
Yeah.
And for science things, I think this is a pretty fascinating and like well-built, like for the most part, movie.
Yeah.
Like the idea of music and light being the way to communicate is a very scientific approach to what would an alien species communicate with. There's some Clark books that follow a similar thing where it's like, I remember in the Rama series, there were a bunch of spider creatures who only communicated with a series of lights on their face. Like
yeah.
they didn't speak or have ears. It was all light.
Yeah. I mean, that's just assuming that they see in our spectrum.
Yeah.
My favorite part of the movie is the jam session at the end
where the
guy playing the Casio is just like playing along with the aliens. It's just dun, 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 dun,
dun, like, it is an intergalactic jam session.
That's how Fish was created.
But Neil deGrasse Tyson actually has commented on Close Encounters before.
What would he say? What has he said?
This is his gripe with the movie.
Yeah.
They all knew the mothership was coming. They all knew it was a flying saucer. They all knew it came from another planet through the vacuum of space. And so what do they do to the left of that monument? They set up runway lights. And I'm thinking, if you could travel through the vacuum of space, you don't need runway lights.
You don't need
runway lights are if you're using air for liftoff. Aliens would not need air for liftoff.
I think that's a great gripe.
It's a very interesting point. I went back after and looked at that scene, and there's not like paved runway. It's more of like just guiding lights. Like you have to like fly in. It's we're here.
That scene where the French guy is just standing on that runway.
Lacombe,
and just he's backlit. So what? There's so many shots in this. They're absolutely beautiful.
All the little things in that scene, like the way that all the extras behave, is perfect, because you have them split, like where some people, as soon as it cracks open, they run back the other direction. Like one guy runs literally into the porta potty, because he can't hold it back.
He can't. It is terrifying.
It's terrifying. But like then you have other people like walking forward, like, I want this. I've wanted this forever.
If I saw that spindly guy, I'd be joining that dude in the porta potty.
See, I would have needed to go to the porta potty, but I'd still be walking forward, like interested. I'd be like, I will deal with this situation later.
First contact, I pooped my pants.
Didn't stop me from shaking their head.
Didn't stop me from shaking that spindly guy.
Or at least
guy's
making
hand.
A. Yep.
Yeah.
Be practicing.
Yeah, of course.
We're both like making hand signals for the podcast listeners. All right. Well, that's going to be our revisit of Close Encounters. Do you guys have any other thoughts on the movie? Please let us know in the comments below or hit us up on Twitter and all that. I know there's some people in the chat roll who are joining us live.
Oh, nice.
Which, if you don't know, thank you to all like 22 or so of you who joined us, including Lewis Cox, Jonas Tiger, Star Drew, Bruce Lee, Spider Geronimo, all you guys. Thank you.
Please let us know your favorite parts of that movie or like, what your memories of that movie are.
Some people are saying, this was E.T. is about divorce. Close Encounters has a similar theme to The Omen, child neglect. I appreciated that comment from Bruce Lee. But so lastly, before we close out, and we're gonna do this every show, we are giving you guys a mission assignment.
You here with a mission, sir?
Secret mission.
It's 5-year mission.
You are a top operative on your most important mission.
That's right. So once a week, we're going to give you guys an assignment to go back and either come up with something, either it'll maybe like what's a top 5 list about something specific, or like your thoughts on a movie that came out. Next week, we're going to be talking about Independence Day Resurgence.
ID4R.
ID42?
ID42 or ID4R.
I guess if it's a 42, it's appropriate. It's like, that works. They snuck that in there.
They did.
You have to think about several levels of like how the movie is
I'm sure
titled.
We just put way more thought into it than anyone else did.
But we'll be taking a look at it next week. So, in honor of that, your assignment is what movie that's so old it should definitely not get a sequel should get a sequel. So said is what pitch your unnecessary sequel to
us? This spawned from us talking about how if Independence Day Resurgence came out in 2005, it would be one of the biggest kind of movies of the year.
Yeah. Oh, it would have blown everyone away.
It would have been huge. But instead, it's coming out in 2016.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it's like it's one of those things where there's like a 10-year like period of where it's like if you'd done it in 2008, it would have been like no.
Yeah.
But now that it's been like really 25 years or so, like it's like so long that it's okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, between that and Ghostbusters, which we'll also be talking about when after that comes out, and then Star Trek when that comes out. There's a lot of like getting back into those nostalgic
there you go.
Science fiction stories. So like the ones I was talking about was like, what if we made a sequel to The Last Starfighter?
I would love a sequel to The Last Starfighter. Make it happen. I was thinking Dark City. I would love to go back to that world.
Interesting.
The Matrix is not a sequel to Dark City, so don't say it is.
We'll come in with our picks, and then you guys can send it to us either on Twitter or Facebook, both of which are at Sci-Fi Weekly, SciFiWeekly.
Yep.
I don't know. Well, Sci-Fi Channel spells it weird.
They do.
I feel like I need to clarify how sci-fi is spelled. But so, yeah, you guys can follow us there, like us on Facebook, and then you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at that Zach Wilson. That's Zach with a C-H. I have to clarify a lot of spelling on this show. Hit us up there. Send us your favorite picks. This is your assignment, so you have to do it.
Yeah, and you can find me at Jess Klein 1. That's JessKlein, the number one.
Yeah, make sure that you are subscribed and liking and all that stuff to the Popcorn Talk. It's the Popcorn Talk on Twitter, Popcorn Talk Network on YouTube. All those places. Go to iTunes. Hit us with a rating and a review. We want to hear from you guys. We want to know what you guys think of this show, because we are going to develop it with your thoughts in mind as we refine it and make it into the best science fiction show that we possibly can. Thank you guys so much for joining us for the first ever edition of Sci-Fi Weekly.
Guys, we've been working on this. We got like four or five weeks in advance planned. We've got some fun shows coming.
Four or five months in advance. We already have our election special picked out.
We do have our election special picked out. Please join us next week. It's been fun.
Yeah. We'll be on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Popcorn Talk each and every week. We will see you then.
Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.